Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
And here we are on breadboxmedia.com. So, if I am on, and I am on, Lennon, my producer, tells me I'm on. Evidently, we had, I wasn't with y'all for these last couple minutes. So, as I was saying, we are here together walking this road as we always do, live, which has its fabulous, fabulous attributes. Being live with you, because I can make mistakes. You can hear me make mistakes. Dogs will bark. I will not be on the air when I think I'm on the air. I had just the most awesome intro, and y'all missed it. But you can call me 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. We got lots of stuff to talk about today. We were talking about eating disorders. We were talking about several different kinds in general forms. A few days ago, we went straight into the one that is kind of an eating disorder, but it's definitely an eating disorder, describes it, but it isn't in the DSM-5, the psychiatric Bible, where we have our diagnostic criteria, but it is something, orthorexia. So I mentioned it yesterday, and I'm not sure whether I described it as detailed, as somebody gave me some feedback that they knew that I might have talked about it a couple days ago, but didn't quite get what it was when they were listening yesterday. So let me tell you two things. I'll define it quickly. And then I will also, because if they thought that, well, you all thought that too. So I'll define it quickly and also tell you this week, we did begin the week talking about eating disorders and how that relates to Lent and the mandate to fast. And also we tied that into triggers. What triggers you? And how sometimes we are so we are inadvertently triggered, have no idea anything's going to happen. We're whistling a happy tune. We walk into a grocery store to get a water or some chips or something. A song is playing and boom, we're triggered into some trauma that happened around the time the song was popular. That does happen. Or like in the case of an eating disorder, it's a constant struggle. Some people don't have that constant struggle. Some people, it is a one-time, one-year deal, and then all of a sudden, they move out of a certain time of in their lives, and they're able to either be treated and it be over, or it never got too far, and they were able to come out of it. But they can always go back and remember that time. You don't know where you're going to be on that spectrum. So when you are faced with, when someone has an eating disorder, or I told you yesterday, anybody, anytime with any problem where they had to retreat from excess, or they had to retreat from going into something they knew was only going to be destructive, drugs, misusing prescription drugs or illegal drugs, pornography, alcohol, whatever is the thing, the favorite sin that does you in, as the country song says, whichever one that is, there's always a little trigger that'll get you back there because it did something for you. You wouldn't do it if it didn't do something for you. So don't take the easy ride from saying, well, you know, hey, I don't have any of these problems. I never log on to porn or I don't drink alcohol. You got something. You have something. And for us, especially women, we are in a day and age of just body dysmorphia. We're collectively body dysmorphic. Nobody, think about waist training. Think about putting in rear end implants, which I several podcasts, maybe a few months ago, I happened to be in a Verizon store. And for the first time, I actually saw someone who had a derriere, a rear end, a butt implant. And as they walked in, they were just looked like a regular person. They're pretty person, maybe 30s. And they walk in the door and the light is just so the whole front is windows. And they're on the, I'm looking at them from the side because I'm sitting there waiting and I'm kind of perpendicular to the entrance of the store. And it was so obvious. Not just because, not the size, but you could see that there was an implant there. So, and then when the person sat down, there was just the tiniest bit unnatural about how they were sitting. So all this to say, we all have something, and we oftentimes it's camouflaged in our world, in our society, because it's so ubiquitous. It's always there. In, let's say, 1776, they would have been completely just, I mean, who knows? There probably would have been religious things around it. It would have been crazy for them to look up one day and see a electrical wire, to see a telephone pole, to see a street light, something. But we don't even notice them anymore, do we? Because they're ubiquitous. So we don't hardly notice that. For us, over the top gets higher and higher and higher, and it doesn't seem very high. So let me define orthorexia, and then we're going to get into today's program. We're going to talk about deliberate living. We're going to talk about how did you do with the fasting, if you did the fasting yesterday, or it's kind of like gotten watered down to, and I don't want to say watered down, that sounds judgmental. I look at it because as a kid, things were just a bit stricter and a bit more strongly defined. Now, let me get to orthorexia, and I'll make a comment about that too, because it does follow the path of a little bit of enlightenment and a little bit of catching up of the church with science and with what's really happening, because there was a time when people didn't understand diabetes. They didn't understand heart disease. There's a time in our country where we really didn't have much of that. We didn't have much cancer and we didn't have much heart disease. And yet the food that we ate was much, quote, worse, unquote, than the food we eat today. So let's go on to this orthorexia. Orthorexia, I'll define quickly again. Go back to my podcast. You can get the app, the Apple app. You can log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com, go over to the right, scroll down, Dr. Michelle Live, and there should be some show notes to tell you, it might even say orthorexia, so it will describe that. But basically, it is defined, and this is for you, the person who told me that they were listening yesterday and didn't quite understand what that meant, so we're good with this. Where you in the name of health, starts off usually, the motivation's health, in the name of health, there becomes an obsession with either one food group or every tiny way the foods are combined, or you can't have a drop of something, a preparation of the food, perhaps exercise around it. Everything becomes down to where a lot of your mental energy, focus, desire, and identity even, or your spiritual quest can be wrapped into food. Into the right food, into the right element, into it being so down to the minute detail that it becomes its own problem and its own obsession, and is actually can be classified, although now not officially, but it was used as from a doc, over 20 years, who was describing what was happening in some of his patients, and he began that because it meant a focus on righteous eating. And that was, it was like, it's an over-focus on righteous eating, over-focus on things that actually are healthy for you but it is extreme. It's almost like anything else. Sexuality is sexuality. Sexual intimacy is sexual intimacy. You're not going to, that's part of our life. It's part of our being. It is a wonderful thing. It's what we're supposed to be doing in life under certain conditions. But you know, you're not really going to, there's lots of conditions where it's not a good thing. So we'll talk about, bring that up on the other side of the break. Does Dr. Michelle catch us on the other side of the break? And we'll finish that part up.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. You can call me and text me 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me DM live at breadboxmedia.com, and it does not go to anyone but me, straight to me. So you are welcome to email me. We do not track you. We don't try to sell you anything. You have a choice if you want to get onto breadboxmedia.com that you can sign up, subscribe, right there on the website. You can also go and just get the apps. And when you do, you can just get an app for my old podcast from Dr. Michelle Live. There's so many ways to access us, depending on where you are. If you have a desktop and you're busy doing something after work or after school, you can just log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com and go to the right, scroll down, there's Dr. Michelle. Also, lots of other contributors there, too, that I listen to that I think are pretty darn cool. So we have a veritable garden from which you can pick some delectable fruit. Let's put it that way. All right. So before the break, we're talking about renaming or redefining orthorexia, because even though these names, you know, sometimes are thrown around and it makes me kind of roll my eyes sometimes, because there's so many, now we have so many acronyms. It's like, I can't keep them straight. So I mentioned orthorexia yesterday, and the person was just tuning in to the theme. Usually I do a theme for a few days at least, and we just didn't get didn't connect the dots. So orthorexia, I hope you got it now. And if not, if it still wasn't clear, if I wasn't clear, then just I think maybe 3 days ago, take a look. You'll see it in the show notes. All right. So we talked a lot about what to do when you're triggered, what to do when you are knowingly going into a situation that will be triggering. It depends. It depends on where you're at and if you're working with a therapist. So sometimes it's best just to not go there. It's best not to go into those situations and force yourself to be, oh, I'm going to be strong. Now, there is such thing as exposure therapy, where you face things, and the better you get, the more things you find don't bother you. But there are those times when it is very triggering. And if you have something where the very thing that causes you, that is a disease to you, which is restricting or manipulating or controlling food, And you will get triggered in that. The best thing to do is, you know, maybe back off a little bit from those situations. Everyone's going to talk about it like a celebration. Everybody's going to talk about it like it's something we need to do. It's part of spirituality. It is a path to holiness. And even that fell into the motivation for orthorexia, which was that obsession with even healthy food, is that people can use that on their spiritual quest, but as a means to get to spiritual quests. So in other words, let's not make ever, here's what we have to do. Somebody said to me one time, what do you make most famous in your mind? If you make, and they had this little hand gesture. So it was like they had their hands out and they were almost like one of those cuckoo clocks, you know, where the bird rotates in and out. They put one hand out in front as they put the other one back. And then they did the reverse. So what are you going to make most famous? Are you going to make the hurt that you had and the anger you have from that the most famous, while behind here, the fact that you were able to get out of that situation relatively unscathed and you have a place, a roof over your head, you're going to make that in the background? Or you can do this, and then they put their hands the other way. It was a friend. The other way, you can put the most famous thought where you are right now. Sun is shining, roof over your head, food in your mouth, and you have feet, you have breath, you have eyes, you have talent. Here's the most famous thought. And then the backward one, but you're too old, you've got kids, you've got this, you've got that, you know, all the other things that cause it to be negative, then you put that in the background. And what do you make most famous? What are you going to say with all the people that are behind your stage on life? You got all the things in all the things you could put out there on stage. But when it comes time to open up that curtain, which one's going to come out? So let's look at it that way. All these other things are details. The most foremost thing that should be famous in your mind during this season or any season is your connection with you, which means by definition, whether you're there or not, like always knowing it, feeling it, thinking it, or going to church, not going to church, is your connection with God, the connection with your creator, the connection with your spirit, the great spirit, the white spirit, the however you want to. And I don't mean that, you know, all of a sudden I get this political correct person like screaming over my shoulder that, oh, no, 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 I don't mean that. It's not like I'm putting them in a picture. I had someone yell at me one time about my blue-eyed Jesus. And I thought, I don't have a blue-eyed Jesus. I never thought about Jesus as a blue-eyed Jesus. And then I know what they were talking about, because then I realized, yeah, that one very famous painting probably from the 40s or 50s that you see all the time with Jesus with the kind of light-colored hair, and I think he might have blue eyes. But I've seen all kinds of Jesuses. I mean, you go to Mexico and go to some of the little towns, which I have with my daughter-in-law's family, and you don't see a blue-eyed Jesus there. From you know, the 1700s and the 1800s. You just don't see it. It's not there. So it depends on where you are. That's the beauty of, I think that's kind of cool, really. That's kind of the beauty of God. He's kind of like a radio announcer in a way that, you know how sometimes you get the voice, probably mine too. You get an idea of what I might look like. And you might see me in one day and go, oh, wow, I didn't really think she'd look like that. Or, interesting. It's just how I pictured her. And I've done that so many times where you hear somebody, you hear the voice. And so you have this image of the person and then you see them. They don't look anything like what you're talking about. But but their voice reaches everybody. So everybody in their listening, let's say they reach 10 million people. Everybody has a different idea of what that person looks like. And it's like, you know, they're just two people who banter on AM 600 in Southern California, you know? And yet we all have our, if we don't happen to see a billboard, we don't know. We all have our picture of what is this person? You know, what do they look like? And even without even wondering, totally wondering, we have a picture in our head because that's what we do. We have all these little input places where we have pictures and sounds and thoughts, and one is in association with another. That's, bring it back to trigger now. That's why triggers are triggers. When you take a Vietnam vet who had to go through what he went through or she went through, and they have post-traumatic stress disorder, and they relate, so many of them relate coming back to the United States and even years later, and they go back to their rural towns in the middle of the United States where they have cold winters, or in the East Coast or somewhere, or even here in Southern California, they still have cold winters, colder winters. And people are all cozy, thinking of the pictures they have again of Christmas and the fire going and the roasting of the chestnuts. And the most of us don't even know what that means, but we think it's pretty darn good. But the smells of a log on a fire and snow coming down and all that, or Thanksgiving or fall, the leaves, to them it was awful. It put them back in country. Because that was the most famous association in their mind. Everything else had been wiped out. All those little fires and all those little roasting marshmallows and all those little sitting around, or the Christmases, or this heralded in a new season of people around the hearth. All that had been wiped out because they had a very strong sense just in smell. They say that smell is one of the strongest triggers to memories, if you can believe that. It's not necessarily the thought, it's not necessarily sound, but they all are strong. People go into shopping malls and have related to me, they go into shopping malls. And while there's hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people in three-layered shopping malls, they walk by a store that's playing a song that was playing when they were on their way to an emergency room after a rape. And they are immediately traumatized and they start getting panicky. So this stuff is very real. If any of that happens to you, please get help. Please call. There are hotlines. There are there are suicide hotlines. There's trauma hotlines. There's rape hotlines. There's support hotlines. There's recovery groups. There are right now right in your town associated with either the hospitals or the universities. There are phone numbers right there to help the general public at least get out of an acute situation and get on the road to finding a more long-lasting therapist or doctor or whatever it can be. So take yourself, love you the way God loves you. He cares. So, you know, take care of yourself the way He wants to take care of you and the way He does take care of you. So we are going to connect these dots on the other side of the break. Don't have time to finish it up right now. See you. You can call 573-4BREAD-4, Dr. Michelle. We'll talk about eating disorders on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, and you may email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can text me with that number. You can call. You can give me comments, suggestions. Break into the story. How do you deal with it? No matter which issue is your issue, it really doesn't matter, because it is your favorite sin that does you in. And I'm not saying you're a sinner for having an eating disorder. There are things, do you know that there are medications that can kick people into eating disorders? There are medications that can kick people. There are Parkinson's medications for Parkinson's disease that can cause impulsivity sexually acting out. And we also have situations, as you know, for people, let's say if any of you have children who have Down syndrome, it's a very common thing. There's no sexual inhibition as they start to reach puberty. So there's all kinds of things that can cause problems. We have genetic disorders. There are Prader-Willi. We have a very extreme genetic disorder where people have to actually chain their refrigerators in their houses. I'm not advocating that as a solution, but people have been that frustrated because what has ever occurred genetically that has eliminated the regulatory mechanism is like having full throttle, no control over your gas pedal, and it's just always full throttle. This is what happens. They have an insatiable appetite. And they have no control over it. They're born that way, and they become huge, and they have no concept of the connection. It is a truly described, diagnosable disorder. It just is. So there's all kinds of reasons. It's not because you're weak, and it's not because you're awful, and it's not because you're selfish, or you just, you know, it's can be anything, and it can be all the above. Well, I must put it this way. It wouldn't be that way with someone who had the genetic disorder. But it can be that you just got so vain, and I've seen this happen. You get so vain, and you just like the way this looks, and now it looks better and better, 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 better. And pretty soon, you're consumed with making sure you're completely afraid and petrified over gaining an ounce. And then when you do, you interpret all these different looks and glances as, you know, evidence that you're not good, or you're not looking good, or you're so proud of yourself for having lost some weight that now that if you gain a little bit back because it's not natural for you to be at a certain body weight, then you start feeling ashamed and guilty, and you're shamed and guilty and awful. That's the whole thing. Shame and guilt and shame and guilt. It just keeps turning in on yourself. So we're going to talk about other things to fast about. Why do you fast? Why fasting on Ash Wednesday? Now, there are catechesical reasons. There are doctrinal reasons. I'm saying those words all wrong. But there's also practical reasons. And one of them is a kickoff to your only focusing. What are you making more famous? You are depriving yourself in one hand to open up. In fact, sometimes in those moments, if you've ever noticed on just a regular meal, and then you go in to try to pray, sometimes if it's been, you know, just a full regular American meal, you're not so there. It kind of sharpens you a little bit to be on your edge a little bit. So it also is a way of giving up. It's a way of sacrifice. You're sacrificing. But let's look at other things we can do. So I love reading these different blogs from people who have eating disorders and in various stages of Catholicism. Some of them are converts. Some of them have been able to compare from no religion to a different religion to two or three religions, and then having converted to Catholicism, like, well, I like being Catholic, but, you know, this isn't working for me. What the heck am I supposed to do? And they either consult or don't consult, but they come up with some pretty great things. And some of them, thankfully for us, are psychologists or psychology students, as we read yesterday. I put a link up there. I hope you all found that. A psychology student, when she wrote it, it was 2 years ago, I think, it was last year. So she may be graduated by now. So here's another one that I thought was pretty good. It says, this was from 2013 from Hannah Brooks Olson, a blog, and she titled it Into Temptation, How to Get Through Lent Without an Eating Disorder Relapse. And all these things that we read the last few days, they're going to bring us down to our great list we're going to come to. I'm going to give it to you about things that we can give up that you wouldn't think about, that you're not thinking about, oh, that's not giving up. And as someone said yesterday, what can you add on? What can you add on? What can you add to your life that is in one way a sacrifice? How can you do that? How can you do that? So it's these little conundrums here. And we're also going to talk about what it means to have, what is deliberate living? What it means to live deliberately. All right. So here it is from Hannah Rose, or Hannah Brooks, I'm sorry, Hannah Brooks. Catholicism is getting a lot of attention right now due to the new pope. Yet the month of March is always a big time for Catholics. And that was when this was happening in March. Because it's the time of the year when they contemplate the life and death of Jesus Christ by observing Lent. This six-week period leading up to Easter is supposed to be a solemn, spiritual time of reflection and prayer. But for those suffering or recovering from eating disorders, it can also be a triggering time. Why? Because Lent, which isn't limited to Catholicism, has a lot to do with food. The period involves days of fasting and or abstaining from certain foods, along with giving something up for the entire stretch. And that something is usually a food product. And we talked about it yesterday, chocolate, the big go-to. For many people, none of this is a big deal. For someone struggling to overcome an eating disorder, the focus on food and restriction can be a minefield. For Mary, who blogs at The Essential Eater, the Existential Eater, Lent becomes as much about anxiety as it was about faith. She has a history with binge eating disorder and is now in recovery. But this time of year makes it hard, she says. Determining whether to participate in Ash Wednesday fasting began to worry her at least several weeks in advance. I want to love God and follow the church's teaching, Mary writes. And so I do the mental gymnastics of trying to figure out if I'm better enough to participate in the fast or if I'm just trying to weasel out because I'm lazy. Fasting can be a trigger for binge eating because it encourages fixation on food. It could be a trigger intensifying intensity of craving, she says. And this is also quoting from mental health expert Gregory Jantz, it could trigger an intensity of food craving. It could also trigger a sense of rebellion, which could lead to a binge. That's precisely Mary's issue. She says, any form of food restriction causes a chain reaction in my messed up brain, she writes. If you tell me I can't have fill in the blank, it's all I can think of. And I'm telling you, when she jokes about her messed up brain, you know, that's how it is with all of us. You can't do this, or don't laugh in church. Remember as a kid, don't laugh in church. And my gosh, that is guaranteed that you're going to giggle all the way through the sermon. So what do you do? Both Jantz and Mary agree. It's a personal choice to fast, and there are options. Maybe just pick one food item that you're going to fast from and just use it that way, Jantz suggests. Or maybe not even a food fast at all. See, I agree with that a little bit more. If the goal is sacrifice and reflection, why not a technology fast? Or get creative. If you're a beauty product fanatic, go without makeup or go without buying lipstick. If you're a bookworm, take a fast from reading and try using the time to pray, volunteer, or do something else spiritual, charitable instead. When in doubt, turn to someone who may be able to talk you through temptation and offer assurances that your illness isn't at odds with God's will. For Mary, this meant talking to her priests, who reassured her that fasting was only for people who were physically able. And I'm going to put in from the priest yesterday, physically or psychologically able. I was simply not able, she writes. He was right. The first years I was actually unable to consider fasting. My best advice for someone with an eating disorder who wants to participate in Lent is to spend time reflecting how great and vast God's love is and to pray for healing, she writes. If you're struggling with an eating disorder, visit A Place for Hope for help and more information. A Place for Hope is actually a website having to do with eating disorders. So we've heard the spectrum. We've heard from someone who is really not telling us whether she's in any kind of religious format, but she's acknowledging and honoring the fact that a trigger is a trigger, and that your unique trigger and what it does for you, either instilling shame and guilt, using, as I've said from the very beginning of this theme, we use sometimes our fixation as a camouflage for our secret desires to look better, to lose some weight, to indulge in our own temptations even more so, or we give up something that isn't so hard. So we want to look at what can we do instead? How can we make this a full thing, even if we're not 100% on board with the whys, or how, you know, why do I even have to do this? Or I don't even get it. Or I'm not even sure that I'm really on board completely with the resurrection. But that's what fasting from something is about. Not that us not logging onto Facebook is going to make us part of Christ. We're going to check that on the other side of the break. We'll see you. This is Dr. Michelle. Please call me 573-4BREAD-4, and I'm going to pick this up right where we left off on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. So before the break, we were talking about aligning ourselves with the cross, with Jesus, and, you know, not logging onto Facebook, but getting in our nice warm cars and our nice cool cars, taking a walk without being shot or hung or crucified or rocks thrown at us, or being a divorced woman without being stoned to death. These things, we didn't have to face those things, but we face our own things. You know, in a world where survival meant spending an entire day collecting food somehow digging, planting, hunting, maybe sometimes being away from the hunters of your tribe or the sheep herders of your tribe or whatever it was, for maybe weeks at a time while you're trying to ward off rattlesnakes and trying to take the meager grain that you have. Life was fixated around food. And it's just like the testosterone in life and the estrogen in life, that in its proper balance with the rest of the earth, we didn't have a lot of that, the stuff we have now. Because that was just it. You don't have a lot of time to be obsessed with how you look about eating if all day long you've got a little stick and you're digging for the last little thing of grain, and then you're trying to pound it into something and trying to walk 10 miles to get the water to bring it back to make it into some kind of paste, and then you got to cook it. That we don't, you know, you just don't think about those kinds of things. They just cannot be in your life. When I say the testosterones and the estrogens, we look at our life now. We'll talk about this next week, maybe sometime soon. Remind me, please. I want to talk about this because we have, like, who we are has gone awry. The feminine qualities that have to come out, and the estrogen-induced ways of thinking and being in our bodies and what we think about them, and procreation has become recreation, and males with a natural testosterone drive, and yet there's nowhere to put that. So they're like, you know, like beating each other up at ball stadiums, and then yet logging on to porn over here and becoming really weak at work over here and not being good parents. And it's just a mad world out there right now. It's where we don't know where to put our natural being. And then you can go the opposite of being way too natural, right? So, boy, am I getting off on a side here. This is our last segment. I'm going to take this up tomorrow. Because it isn't just eating disorder. It's not all only about eating disorder. I want to read something to you again, because I love doing this, and I really apologize. Every one of these, except for probably the first one I talked about on Monday, that I get from different blogs and different articles and different experts. I don't have the person's name, and I don't even have the website. So I'm really sorry, but I have to say, this is not me, this is someone else. So this is a Catholic here, and I'm gonna try to get this in for this this last part. I have to confess, I don't think that we do Lenten fasting well in my neck of American Christianity. Most often, people give up some token item for the fast, which really isn't a fast at all. Giving up chocolate or soda is my big weakness, is nice and all, but doesn't really amount to the sort of disciplined fasting the church really expected through the years. Western Christian, especially Roman Catholics, take their cues from Pope Paul VI, Apostolic Constitution on Penance, which reorganized fasting and abstinence observation into their current form. This includes the fast is one full meal per day plus smaller portions of food at another time of the day that does not equal a full meal. Abstinent means one cannot eat meat, i.e. flesh, but are permitted eggs and dairy, and even to use sauces, which are seasoned with meat, but in which meat is not the lion's share of the meal, i.e. chicken broth and the like. Fasting is to be practiced by all people 18 to 59 on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, and abstinence is to be practiced on Ash Wednesday, Good Friday, and all Fridays during Lent. In the Eastern Orthodox Church, fasting is quite a bit more strict and carries on beyond the Lenten season. An essential element of the Christian life is fasting. In the Orthodox Church in America, Christ fasted and taught men to fast. Blessed fasting is done in secret without ostentation or accusation of others. That's from Matthew. It is, as its goal, the purification of our lives, the liberation of our souls and bodies from sin, the strengthening of our human powers of love for God and man, the enlightening of our entire being for communion with the Blessed Trinity. The Lenten fast is as appears below. Week before Lent, cheese fair week, meat and other animal products are prohibited, but eggs and dairy are permitted even on Wednesday and Friday. First week of Lent, only two full meals are eaten during the first 5 days. Now they're going to go on. He's going to go on. I'm going to skip that part. He's going on to the strictness of these different fasts. Weekdays in the second through the sixth weeks, you have strict fasting. Every day you avoid meat. This is in the Orthodox Church. And he goes on to say how they are. During Holy Week, you have an evening meal permitted. All these different things, wine and oil, there's all these very specific things that this person has gone through. Now he goes on to say, or she goes on to say, and we'll find out about this in a second, I used to fast every year during Lent. Often that fast was a combination of the Roman Catholic rules and giving up something. One year, I used the Lenten fast to quit smoking. Several years, during my wilder college days, I chose to give up alcohol. I used to look forward to abstinence from alcohol in those days because I felt my head was always clear and it gave me a chance to focus on the close of the semester. I often wouldn't eat meat at all during Lent, though I usually simply abstained on Fridays. I have not fasted from food in 6 years. It isn't because I'm lazy or because I'm weak, but fasting from food cannot and probably will not ever be a part of Lent for me again. Why? I'm married to an adult anorexic. Though she mostly enjoys healthy times, she has struggled with symptoms for decades and must be conscious to this day about food intake and her anxiety levels. Anorexia is so much more complex than what you may have learned in the 80s after school special you watched as a kid. It is not often about a person feeling like they are too fat and then starving him or herself. The reasons people restrict their food intake are vast and diverse. For some, it is a response to stress or anxiety. For others, the need to feel control. For yet others, it is a way of self-abuse, much in the same way others may cut or burn their bodies in order to self-mutilate. Anorexia is not just about teenage girls either. While most cases of anorexia develop in the teenage years and rarely develop after the age of 20, it is estimated that at least 10% of all active anorexics are above the age of 40. It is also estimated that for 60 to 70% of all anorexics, anxiety disorders exist that are unrelated to body weight or body image. So anorexia is not about a person desiring to be thin. A key to not suffering a setback in the recovery process is to be mindful about food intake. Encouraging food restriction or participating in food restriction can often lead to anorexics suffering a relapse. This is especially dangerous when it comes to religious fasting. When the church ties pleasing God or spiritual growth, a restriction of food intake, to restricting your food or a particular food, it becomes a recipe for disaster. The church needs to find other more creative and caring ways to encourage those with eating disorders to participate more fully in the life of the church, especially during Lent. Quote, most adult anorexics struggle with the same shame aspect. When that shame is transferred into your spirituality because you can't participate in fasting, which is where we focus so much of our energy during Lent, it makes you feel even more ashamed, more broken. While that brokenness is a part of Lent, there is a point at which it becomes unhealthy. One adult anorexic told me. So he was quoting this anorexic. In some ways, this is a post with a beginning and a middle, but with no real end. There are no real conclusions I have drawn or advice I have to offer. To diagnose a problem is a good start, and we as the church must find ways to help those suffering with eating disorder observe a Lenten discipline without contributing to unhealthy food restriction and without making those with eating disorders feel even more on the outside during Lent. I sure wish I had some answers to how this works. Perhaps some readers do. Well, bless you, whoever this is. I apologize so profusely that I cannot give you the name of this person. I found this. It was beautiful. I printed it off and the name did not come out. Probably in a Google about fasting during Lent or I think I even Googled what the heck is Lent even about. But this stuff, you've got it. I love the fact that he said this is a post with a beginning and a middle, but no real conclusion, no real end. He can't give advice. He's married to an adult anorexic. So what he did is he took a little starburst. He took an asteroid and he crashed it into our beliefs about anorexia. And he said, it can be any of those things, but it's not only those things. Adults struggle with this very strongly, and our church has a way of not understanding that, not because they're bad or awful, but like the people at your own table. If you're the one who had the eating disorder and you remember sitting down at your parents' table and you remember those things, these are the deals we're talking about. So we're going to pick this up tomorrow because I want to tie this together, because you can hydrate yourself and be a full human being. You can walk through Lent, get an amazing amount from it. So we will talk about this tomorrow. Please email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. See you tomorrow.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.